Hey, we want to welcome you to a brand new talk series we're doing called Full House. Anybody ever watched the show Full House growing up? Anybody tried Fuller House? Yeah, was it as good or no, it wasn't as good. That's okay. Well, unfortunately, we weren't able to get Danny Tanner in as a speaker, so it's going to be me tonight. But we think this series is going to be an awesome one for you. In fact, all throughout history, there's this idea that God kind of takes any people, any group of people, or any place where people gather in his name, and he kind of calls it a house. And very often he uses that metaphor that this is a house. But you got to understand that God is not a hermit and God is not a recluse. God wants to have people in his house. And so God wants a full house. And so throughout these upcoming weeks, next week we have the whiteout party, which is going to be insane. We're doing an indoor snowball fight, and then we are feasting on some ice cream. It's going to be awesome. But then the following week, we're going to continue in this series called Full House. And I'm telling you, this is going to be a series that's going to help transform the way you look at yourself, but also the way you look at other people. And so you need to be here each and every week. And hey, bring a friend too. Tonight, we're gonna get into something that has to do with when you lose something, okay? Once a year, my mom would do this thing when I lived in my parents' house. And it was basically she would gather the whole family together. And she would gather us all together, and she goes, guys, this is the end of the line for you. Today's the day you're going to die. And you may be saying, well, that's kind of weird. And yes, it is kind of weird. My mom didn't actually say that, but what she really did say is that today is spring cleaning. And in my mind, that was the same thing, you know? I mean, it might as well have been. And so what we knew is that that entire day was going to be spent cleaning every crack and unholy crevice of our house that had not been touched for months and months and months. And so, man, we would be dusting. We'd all get our individual assignments. Like, I knew sometimes I was going to have to dust on top of the bookshelves that had not been reached because my mom was a little too short. She couldn't get up there. And so I knew I was going to have to dust, or maybe I would have to vacuum and just wipe things down. And it was just a day of tremendous horror. But the worst part was that there was always a segment of the day that I had to devote to my room. And I'm generally a pretty clean person. I can't say I always was a clean person, but I'm generally a pretty tidy person. But how many of you know, whenever your parents told you to clean your room during the year, what did you do with all the stuff that you didn't know what to do with in your room? Where'd you put it? In the closet, right? And so the problem is that I would clean my room, but I knew that there was something happening over in that closet. And it was a day of reckoning, to be just quite honest with you, because every year I would have to go in there and just find clothes I hadn't worn and papers, letters I had written to others or maybe to myself. I don't know. I was a weird kid. You'd find old trophies. You'd find little keepsakes from your sports career. You know, shout out to the Little League champions. Actually, my teams usually were very bad. But, you know, you find all this stuff, and you're just, like, going through your closet, and you're like, man, this is terrible. I put all my stuff for an entire year in here. But every once in a while, you'd find some stuff, and you're like, oh, that's kind of cool, man. I kind of forgot I had that shirt. I might pull that thing out again. You're like, oh, it's a little tight now. You know, I've grown a couple inches, but I don't think anybody will notice, right? You know, you find these things, you're like, oh, this is really cool. See, but here's the thing, is like maybe you've done something like that. Maybe you know what I'm talking about. Maybe you kind of identify. Maybe you've had to move before, and when you moved, you found like, wow, I have this, you know, CD from the 2000s. Like, whoa, this is like an ancient relic, you know, so cool. But very often what happens is when we find those things, there was a reason we lost them in the first place. You know what I'm saying? Like, as cool as they are, as novel as they are to kind of find in that moment, the reason that you didn't find them earlier in the year, the reason you didn't really care about them is because, to be honest, they just weren't that valuable to you. And I know they weren't that valuable to you because if they were, you would have looked for them a lot earlier. And I believe that there are some things that we can gauge how valuable they are based on how hard we're willing to look for them. Because I'll be honest to you, if I drop, maybe I have a piece of gum in my pocket and I drop it out in my car and I look for it and I can't find it, I'll probably just move on and just say, hey, good luck to the little aunt that finds that. That's like a year's worth of meals for you, you know? But if I were to drop my phone, I might spend a little bit more time looking for it. And if it's not in my car, I might drive back to the last place I saw it. I might start, you know, using a friend's phone to like dial it in and be like, oh man, I don't remember. Did I put it on, you know, loud or is it on silent? I can't remember, right? Because we can look for something to the extent of how valuable we think it is. And I would suggest to you that God is urgently looking for something tonight. That as we sit here in this room, that God is frantically going after something tonight that is lost, that he is looking for. He hasn't just put it off in his closet. This is something that God is all about. In fact, if this gets lost, it's going to get lost forever. In fact, God cares about this so much that because it's lost, he wants everybody to join the search party. And what's lost is people. And if you're taking notes, maybe you like to take notes in Paramount, tonight's message is called Turn the House Upside Down. Turn the house upside down, because when we talk about lost, we're talking about people who have been lost from God. They've lost the connection. Here's what we know. All throughout humanity, God has kind of designed people to be in relationship with him. We see this from the very first people who ever existed, from the very first people who had souls and could commune with God. We see from Adam and Eve that God wanted not just to create people and let them be, but that God wanted a relationship with you and me. And so God created humankind. He created mankind with this idea, with this sense of relationship. But because of who we are and because of what we're prone to, the darkness of our hearts, we have actually disconnected ourselves from that. And this is really obvious to see, because we look around and we see the Syrian attacks with chemical gases, where a leader is literally gassing people to a gruesome death, men, women, and children. And we say, man, that's wrong. We look at abusive households where people are getting hurt and we say, how could someone do that? We look at the wars. We look at the poverty. We look at places where people are starving and other people are eating and throwing away food. And we say, that's not right. And we say, oh, man, I'd love to change the world. But the problem is not just the world. The problem is in here. See, because our hearts, if we're honest with ourselves, we could look inside and say, well, that problem doesn't just start out there. It starts in here. And very often we say, God, I want you to fix the world, but I don't want you to fix me. And very often we say, God, I want you to save the world, but I don't want you to save me. Very often we say, God, I want you to change the world, but I don't want you to change me. And so because of that, we have people who have wandered off from their God created destiny to be in relationship with God. They're lost. And let me just tell you this, that this is God's biggest priority, is to find that which is lost. In fact, Jesus came to earth. Jesus claimed something very specific. He said, hey, I am not just a good guy. I'm not just somebody who's significant in history, but I am God in flesh. And so when we want to know what God's thinking, Jesus is a great place to go look, because Jesus shows us, he verbalizes very often what God cares about. And you know, you may be surprised by this, but Jesus actually got frustrated with people. Did you know that? And maybe if you're new to church, you think, yeah, I could see that. Maybe Jesus or God is kind of frustrated with me. Maybe God is kind of mad at me. And I want to tell you that if you're here and you think, well, I'm not good enough for God, or I'm just imperfect, that Jesus is not mad at you. That may surprise you. But Jesus never got mad at the people who weren't good enough. Jesus never got mad at the people who were imperfect and messed up. But the people that Jesus got frustrated with were the people who used religion or devotion to God as an excuse to stop caring about other people. Maybe you didn't know that. Maybe you didn't know that Jesus said, hey, look, you can't just say, oh, I'm serving God, and then just treat people like trash just because that's how you want to make an excuse for yourself. And if you've ever been to a church, or maybe you've had experiences with Christians or maybe with God, and you think that's what he's all about, I can just tell you that that's not who Jesus was, and that's not what he's about. And so Jesus, he was frustrated with these religious, pure, perfect people who just thought they had it all figured out, but they treated people like trash. And so Jesus, he got fed up with it, and he decided to tell some stories. And he gave some stories to the people who were following him. And one of those people was a guy named Peter. And as these people were going around, Peter was a person who followed Jesus directly. And then there was a man who investigated all of this named Luke. And Luke actually wrote an account of Jesus' life. And this is where we get the gospel of Luke, the recording of Jesus' life in Luke. And so we're going to look at Luke chapter 15. And here's what it says, starting in verse 8. This is Jesus telling a story. He says, what woman having 10 silver coins, if she loses one coin, does not light a lamp and sweep the house and seek diligently until she finds it? And when she has found it, she calls together her friends and neighbors, saying, rejoice with me, for I have found the coin that I had lost. Just so I tell you, there is joy before the angels of God over one sinner who repents. This lady loses something of value to her, and she turns the whole house upside down. Just this week, I was actually relaxing. This may surprise you, but I'm very good at relaxing and just watching TV and not doing anything. Turning my brain off doesn't come as any shock to most of you, I'm sure. But, you know, it was my day off, and I was just like, you know what, I'm going to watch some TV. I'm going to maybe play some video games, get whooped on in FIFA or something. I don't know. And so I decided, okay, I'm going to look for my remote, and I realized, I don't know where my TV remote is. And you know how it is at first when you notice something's missing, you're like, oh, okay, well, I'll just find it, like, in just a second. You know what I'm talking about. I'm going to take you through the stages of your mind. And I was like, okay, yeah, it's got to be somewhere. So I started, like, looking around. I'm looking under, you know, we have some throw pillows on our couches. I'm like, okay, let me just look around. No, it's not on the arms. Okay. So then, you know, mildly, I'm like, okay, well, if you can't get a little dirty to look for your remote, why not? You know, you don't deserve it. So I start sticking my hands inside the couch and just saying, it's not in there, but hey, you know, that's a nice little burger in there, you know, whatever could be. That did not happen, but if it did, I would like be like, oh, this is a miracle couch. And so I'm looking in the couch, and I'm like, I don't see it. So I start taking the couch cushions off, and I start just picking them up and just throwing them across the room. And I'm like, where is it? And as I'm doing this, panic is starting to grow, because reminds you this, that if you lose the remote for one day, sure, could you go turn on the TV? Yes. But this is not just for those who live today. This is for those who come after us. I do not want those who live in this house beyond me to have to go without a remote for their entire life, get up and turn the television on by hand, change the input, the volume. No, thank you. And so I'm tearing these off, and I'm like, this is getting weird. I'm really panicking, and like, I wish I was joking, but I'm really panicking inside. I'm like, I really don't want to have to get up every time. So I start reaching my hand under the couch. I'm like looking, and you know how weird fuzzy it is under your couch? Like, I don't know why that is. Like, why do they have to make the bottom of your couch spider webs? Like, who designed that? And so I'm like under the bottom of my couch. I'm like, this is just not right. But like, I don't find it. And so I'm like really worried. And then all of a sudden I look over, and sitting on top of the table right next to the couch was the remote. Now, you tell me what idiot put it there. What happened? I lost something that apparently was incredibly more valuable to me than it should have been. And I did whatever it took. I did whatever it took. And maybe when you hear this story, you think, oh, this lady had 10 coins. She lost the coin. That's kind of weird. Like, why would you spend all this time looking for a coin? But see, coins back in this days were not quarters or dimes or even silver dollars. In fact, they were called shekels. And a shekel was something that represented one day's wage. And so maybe she worked for minimum wage. Maybe that was worth 65, 70 bucks, something like that. Maybe most of you would say, yeah, I'd look for that. But maybe some of you are like, you know, I still got a couple hundred left over. I should be fine, you know, like, who needs that? But see, here's what we know about this lady. We know that even though she seemed to have 9 other coins, she wasn't so rich that she could just afford to let the other one go. In other words, she wasn't so satisfied with what she already had that she was just content with that, and that she could just let one be a loss. And Christians, let me just speak to you for a second, because it becomes very easy in your walk with God to become this person who is a part of the 9, who makes friends with the 9, who goes to church with the 9, who makes friends at school with the 9, who hangs out on the weekend with the 9, so much so that you think, well, who really needs the 1? And let me just tell you that Jesus said, look, if you want to know God's heart, I am really happy about the 9, but I will not stop looking for the 1. We cannot be so satisfied with who's already here that we forget who's outside of these walls? Who's lost? And you know, maybe you're here and you're hearing this and you're like, man, I'm not even a Christian. I want to challenge you to think about this, because the word lost is actually kind of an offensive word if you think about it, right? Like, who are you to tell me that I'm lost? Like, who are you? And let me just tell you that the heart Jesus has is not to say, well, I want you to know how terrible of a person you are and I want you to hate yourself. But no, Jesus says, look, I didn't come to be a doctor to the healthy. I came to be a doctor to those who are sick and know they need help. And Jesus is offensive in that way, but let me just say this, that if you never recognize your need for Jesus, you'll never be found. You'll never be found. If you don't recognize that my heart is not just protected, it's not just this innocent heart and the rest of the world is evil. See, because it'd be all too easy to think that, but Jesus, no, he came to say, look, I know that you've got a problem with darkness in here, but let me give you a solution. Let me show you a way that you can be made whole, that you could have a new heart. And specifically to the church, we have to know this, Paramount. We have to know this, that Jesus came to seek and save those who are lost. Plain and simple. If you want to know what Jesus was all about, Jesus came to seek, to look for, to discover, and to save those who are lost. Maybe those who have lost hope. Maybe those who have lost their connection with purpose. Or ultimately those who feel like they've lost themselves. Jesus came to seek and to save those who are lost. And here's where this goes from being a cute message to something that should bother you a little bit. Jesus doesn't just let it end there, that Jesus came to seek and save those who are lost. But Jesus said, nuh-uh. If you have been found, if you were one of those lost people who got found, then it's your turn to start looking. This is not something we get to put off and just say, well, hey, somebody else will do it. Jesus said, if you were found, then you need to start finding. It's part of the deal. It's part of who you're called to be. And I just have to wonder how many of us, we approach God with this idea of everything he can do for us. We never really think what matters the most to him. I want you to imagine for a sec, maybe you have a little brother or a little sister or maybe a little cousin or a nephew or a niece, you know, who really can't watch out for themselves. They kind of need some chaperone, you know, some supervision. I want you to imagine that whoever that parent is, maybe that's your own kid, whatever, whoever that is, they say, hey, you're going to be watching little Johnny tonight. And so you say, well, okay, that's great. We're going to go to Disney World, okay? We're going to go to Disney World. I'm going to give him the greatest afternoon of his entire life. He's going to eat more sugar. He's going to drink more $16 water than any human being can possibly consume. And so you guys are going around, you're riding the Dumbo ride, and you kind of like it a little more than Johnny does. It's okay, you can admit it. And you're there, and you're going through Toy Story, and you're waiting in 5 hours of lines, and it's all great, and you're doing it with a smile because you love Johnny. But I want you to picture their face. I want you to imagine that once you go to purchase one more little cinnamon roll, one more little $16 water, that when you turn around, Johnny's not there. Johnny? How many of you guys know that instantly your priority becomes, I better find Johnny. I better find that little kid. And you'll search, you'll do whatever it takes, man. You'll go through every bit of protocol there is to go through. You'll do whatever it takes because you need to find them. But let me ask you this question. What would it be like if I came up to you in the middle of your search and you're looking around and you're trying to find this little precious innocent kid that could be anywhere, that could be hurting, that could be taking advantage. You're looking and you're saying, okay, I'm really stressed out. What would happen if I came up to you in that time and I just say, hey, man, hey, I know you're looking for Johnny. I'm super hungry. Could you take me to Taco Bell? Look, is Taco Bell good to go to at some other point? You could argue that it could tear up your stomach, whatever. But yeah, it's not a bad thing. It's not a bad question, right? Like, it's not a bad question to say, hey, could you take me to Taco Bell? But when that kid's lost, that's just not the right question. That's just not the right thing to ask. You know why? Because there's someone that is missing, and Taco Bell just doesn't quite matter as much. And I wonder how many of us approach our prayer lives and God this way. We say, you know, God is looking for this person. God is looking for this person who is lost and could be hurting and broken. And he's looking for them. He's saying, I need them to be found. And we're over here like, God, could you like help me pass that test I didn't study for? And I know like I should have studied, but I just like kind of didn't feel like. And we're kind of like treating God like, hey, could you just do everything for me? And I'm not saying it's wrong to pray for help on your test. Hear me on that. I'm not saying it's wrong to have God help you in your situation. That's huge. But if our prayers are only about ourselves, then we are missing the very heart of God, because there is someone missing. There's someone lost who needs to be found, and you're the person that's supposed to help God find them. I wonder how many of us look at prayer, or we look at our Bible, we look at these things and we say, oh, that's just a good thing to do. That helps me go from this level of Christianity to this level of Christianity. And if I maybe put in an extra 5 minutes tomorrow, I could get to this level of Christianity. And let me just say this, that what would happen if our prayers turned from this like legalistic, this dutiful thing where we say, oh, I just need to do this, to where we all of a sudden get a burden for people that God has a burden for. Where we use prayer to get God's heart for whatever happens in this life. The founder of Salvation Army, you've probably seen them, you know, with the Santa Clauses ringing their bells at Christmas time, and you've probably seen that they do thrift stores and they help people who are in more difficult situations. The founder was a guy named William Booth, and he lived in the 1800s, and he lived in England, and he started this thing called the Salvation Army as a way to actually bring people salvation through Jesus. I don't know if you know this, but they actually preached Jesus everywhere they would go. And part of why churches didn't really like them is because they would go to prostitutes, and they would go to people that were on drugs, and they would go to people who were in gangs and all of these things that people thought, well, that person doesn't belong in a church. And they went to all those people, and they found all those people, and they started preaching Jesus to them. And people were coming to know Jesus in huge amounts. And so at one point, William Booth, he sent a young man from England over to the United States to do something very similar. And at this time, the young man, he wrote back, William Booth, and he sent this letter. He says, look, I'm trying everything I can to like help people find out about Jesus. I'm doing prayers, I'm doing services, I'm doing attractional things, I'm doing events, and nobody is coming to know Jesus. And when William heard this, he didn't have text messaging, he didn't have Facebook, he didn't have Instagram, he didn't have Snapchat where he could just do it instantly. Instead of Instagram, it was Telegram. And so what William Booth did is he sent a telegraph, and it was two words. And these two words were so powerful, because these two words, they spoke more than an entire chapter could. He said this: try weeping. Try weeping. William Booth was saying, look, when your heart breaks enough for someone that you start weeping, that you start crying, that your heart is that touched, that you realize that, man, who am I? That's when God can begin to move. And you know what I found? I don't think there's a greater way to get God's heart for something, to where you get to that point, than through prayer. Because prayer is the time where God begins to give you his heart. Yes, we move God's heart to do amazing things, and God answers prayers, and it's incredible. But sometimes I think that God is waiting to answer prayers until we are responding at the level that he's called us to respond. Now, I got to be honest that there's so many times throughout my life, or even today as I was praying for you guys in this message, I just started to notice how all of my language is about God, help me, God, me, I. And sometimes I'm just like, yeah, that's great, but God, I think I'm missing it. Because outside of these walls, man, we've had incredible things happen inside of these walls. Man, we've had hundreds of students in the last few years, thousands over the last decade who have made a decision to follow Christ. And that is awesome. But outside of these walls, there are thousands upon thousands of students in your high school, in your community, in your teams, in your family who are hurting, who are broken, who are looking for the answer. And we know what the answer is. Who are we to not bring it to them? And as I was praying, I just felt so convicted. I just felt, who am I? Who am I to just stand by while someone else is not guaranteed the invitation that I've been guaranteed? Because see, look, I was lost too. And the truth is, you were lost too. I don't care if you grew up in church. I grew up as a pastor's kid. I spent the night on those pews on New Year's Eve. You know what I'm talking about? I grew up in church. But let me tell you, I was lost and I needed to be found. And I don't care if you grew up in church. I don't care if you've never stepped foot in church in your life. If you have been found by Jesus, then it is now your responsibility. It is now something that's supposed to become the inner depths of your heart that you want to help find others. You want to give them that same invitation. What I love is when we begin to pray, passionate prayers. They don't have to be long prayers, but they need to be passionate. And when we begin to pray these passionate prayers that God, save my high school. God, I believe that you could bring change to my friends. God, I believe you could bring change to my family. God, these people who seem so far lost, I believe that you can find them. When we begin to pray those prayers, it's amazing what God does. God begins to open our eyes. And we begin to see things totally differently. And I would say to you this way, that if you want to find the things that no one is finding, you need to look where no one is looking. See, because it'd be really easy to look at those people in your school that are kind of, everybody else kind of makes fun of them. They don't really fit in. They don't really seem to have the social skills. It'd be so easy to do that. But see, if you get God's heart, you start to look for that person. You say, you know what? That person, they need to be found. They need to be found. And what happens is you start to look at the star football player. You start to look at those popular kids who seem to have it all together. And you start to realize, you know what? I think that they're hurting and broken on the inside. And they need to be found. And you start looking at those people who have treated you wrongly. And you look at those people who have created all that drama in your life. But when you start to get God's heart, you start to see them as people who, yes, they've hurt you. But they're only hurting you because they've been hurt themselves. And they need to be found. If you want to find what no one's finding, you got to look where no one's looking. You got to look with eyes that no one is seeing with. And my heart for you tonight is, look, it's very simple. This is what I was praying for, is that you guys, as the next generation, would take it personally. That this isn't just somebody else's job to go out, and this isn't just Ryan's job to go preach and to do this, but this is me. It's my responsibility. It starts with me. My high school. Man, what would it look like if every day you just woke up in the morning and you said, man, God, I'm going to give you the next 5 minutes to just pray for my school. What would happen is when you were walking from your locker to your classroom and you said, God, show me opportunities today to give people an invitation to your love, an invitation to church. Here's what I love about this is that you don't have to have it all figured out. You don't have to be super far ahead. You don't even have to be an amazing Christian, but you can always invite. You can do the very thing that Jesus' followers did. And they said, hey, look, I know this is hard to explain how Jesus has like changed us, but you just got to come and see for yourself. I may not be able to explain everything to you. I may not be able to help you figure it out. I hope to be able to do that. But look, can you just come and see? Can you just come and see that Jesus is, he's the real deal? That man, when you find Jesus, you find everything you've ever needed. And you find that those things that you wanted, we're empty compared to what it is to know Jesus. Look, I know this. I know that God is ready to move in you tonight. And maybe I'm just talking to that one person that says, you know what? I believe that this is for me. I just am not satisfied with the nine. I'm going to go after the one. And if that's you, then I want to say, man, God is on your side. He's with you. And so I want to encourage you guys, man. We have Easter weekend coming up this weekend right here at BC. We have Whiteout Party happening next week. And I just want to tell you, man, this is a great opportunity to invite someone to know Jesus. Maybe that's an invitation to church, or maybe that's you telling them your story. But this is a week where you can invite. I just love thinking about what God can do when we say yes. Did you know this? That most people, when they do the studies, they say most people would love to come to church. They've just never been invited. Isn't that interesting to think that most people are waiting for your invitation? And I feel challenged by this because, look, Easter is 4 days away, and I haven't invited anyone to Easter. In fact, today in my office, I was writing out a little note to my neighbor who I've just met a few times, and I was like, you know what? I got to get this done because God's looking for the lost. God is looking for those who need to be found. Let's go ahead and pray. God, I thank you that when we were lost, you didn't give up on us. In fact, God, that you did everything that you could do to bring us to you. Tonight, we just, in response, we're not trying to like earn your love. We're not trying to just, you know, be good enough for you. But God, we just want to care about what you care about. We just want to love those people that you love. Holy Spirit, I pray that you would do that very thing in our hearts right now, that you would soften our hearts with compassion, with mercy. Help us to love people the way you love them. Help us to see the people that no one else is seeing. Look, with no one looking around, with every head bowed, every eye closed, I just want to give an invitation in here tonight because I recognize that although you came to church tonight, maybe you would say, honestly, man, I feel like I've just been lost. And I just want to give an invitation tonight for you to be found. I want to give an invitation to know Jesus. And I love this about Jesus, that Jesus said, hey, look, I will never force anyone to follow me. I won't, I promise. I will never make you do anything. But man, I can promise if you're willing to give me your life, I'll give you my life. I'll give you everlasting life. Jesus said, look, if you're willing to believe that I died on the cross, that I rose from the grave, and that I can forgive your sins, if you're willing to believe that I will literally give you a new heart. I will give you eternity with me, eternal life. For God so loved the world that he gave his only son, that whoever would believe in him wouldn't die forever but would have eternal life. That's the God we serve. So real quick, look, there's no pressure here, but if you say, man, I'm ready to pray that prayer, I'm ready to accept that invitation, I'm ready to be found, we're going to pray a prayer together that many in this room have prayed before. And I would just challenge you to pray it from the depths of your heart and watch what God does in your life. Paramount, can you help me pray? No one prays alone. Say, Jesus, thank you that you died for me, but you rose again so I could have life. Tonight, I ask for forgiveness for all of my sins. I believe that you are God and you can save me.